Welcome to another episode of The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes, the storytelling show that features The Clearing, where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to be told, and where all my guests have two things in common. They're all creative individuals and all with an interesting story to tell. There are some lovely storytelling metaphors, a clearing, a tree, a juicy storytelling exercise called 5-4-3-2-1, some alchemy, some gold, a cheeky bit of Shakespeare, and a cake. So it's all to play for. So yes, welcome to The Good Listening To Show, your life and times with me, Chris Grimes. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we shall begin. Yes, indeed, and what an exciting, exciting day here in the Good Listening To Show clearing. We have got a national treasure, not called Trevor, a national treasure. Christopher Biggins, one Biggins, the Biggins, is in the Good Listening To Show clearing. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Hurrah, you are a British, I know you know who you are, but just to blow a bit of happy smoke at you, you're a British actor, media celebrity, TV personality and compere, a grand dam or dame of pantomime. You got the best award of all after 50 years in pantomime. In 2017, you got given a Lifetime Achievement Award. And if I may, in researching you, which I've really, really enjoyed, I think you are a veritable sofa cushion because you've been a happy appendage to all the sofas of all the national TV programs of our favorites that we care to mention. I think I first ever saw you in I, Claudius, playing Emperor Nero way back in the day. For years, I thought it was called I, Clavdivs. That's probably because I was a bit of a school div. You never know. But we've also got other commonality in that we both trained at the Bristol Old Vic Theatre School, and we both got our first ever job that gave us our equity card with the lovely David Wood. So that's who we have in common, and I'm really, really, really happy to have you here. You happen to be my first recording of 2023, please.
Ah, fantastic. Very good.
So how's morale? What's your story of the day, first of all? I know you've just come down having played, it's Mrs. Smee in Peter Pan, which you did many, many years ago as well, getting you going on the career of being in pantomime.
I did. It was very interesting because last year, I was asked about March, I think, quite early on in the year, if I would like to go back to Darlington. Now, why Darlington is so important to me, because I started my pantomime career in Darlington 46 years ago as the dame. And I did my first dame there as Mother Goose. And I then did 3 years there. I did Jack and the Beanstalk, and I think Dick Whittington. So that's when I started my career. And first of all, when they asked me, Dougie Squires, who directed, and Jamie Phillips, who was the producer and designer, and Peter Todd, who ran the theatre, they asked me to go to Darlington. I said no. I was actually quite appalled.
Because, how dare you invite me to Darlington?
Exactly. I mean, not Darlington. I love Darlington, but just the fact that it was pantomime. And to play a dame, every dame, I was 27 years old, every dame I'd seen up until then seemed to be in their 90s. I mean, they were very old men. And so I said no, and I kept saying no. And eventually they mentioned one day money. Bearing in mind, this is 46 years ago, in a theatre where the top price ticket was 1/6. They offered me £1,000 a week. And I thought, £1,000 a week, I better do this. So I did it, and of course I fell in love with it, and I've been doing it ever since, apart from 1 year. And that was when, well, actually 2 years, but the one big year was when I did The Jungle.
Yes, and you were that's when you were officially crowned not just head of The Jungle, but you were the nation's absolute darling from that point on. That was 2007.
That's right. I mean, it was fantastic. I mean, I love the experience. It was just wonderful. And it's very important to me because people say to me, like, I'm thrilled. You mentioned right at the beginning, I, Claudius, or I, Claudius, as we pros call it.
As opposed to I, Clavdiv.
I, Clav, that's right. But I, Claudius was a wonderful, wonderful role. And I still think of it as probably one of my great roles, except that the following day it was transmitted, I was offered Poldark, the sex-crazed vicar, which was another wonderful role that I did for television. But I, Claudius, was just phenomenal. I mean, Nero, I really believe that I was Nero in a previous life. And I, because I was, everything I had was in so common with him that it was extraordinary. I mean, I would, if I could have been anybody in the past, it would be Nero. I mean, he was extraordinary. I mean, he had over 1,000 servants. And I'd love servants. I can't tell you, it would be so wonderful.
And do you play the violin and enjoy setting things alight and watching them burn? Is that
absolutely all of that? No, sadly, I don't play the violin. But I have an obsession with fire. I don't know. There's just something about him that I absolutely adored. And it was just a wonderful role to play. But if people say to me now, "What is the greatest thing you've ever done?" I have to say, I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. Because to win that and to win it by a huge vote was fantastic, because you're voted in by the public.
Yes.
And that is what is so important to me, is the fact that the public took me under their arms and just engulfed me. I mean, it was fantastic.
And that's why it's a genuine, sincere compliment to call you a sofa cushion on all the nation's favourite TV channel sofas, because you've been on so many. I mean, we don't need to list the programmes, but, you know, having, you know, obviously done sort of Surprise with Cilla Black. I know that you're greatest friends with Dame Joan Collins as well. I mean, you're just there as a sort of centrepiece national treasure.
I know, I don't quite know. I mean, I think it's because I love life. That's one of the main things. I mean, I adore people and I love life. But when I look back on who I've met and what the things I've done, my career, the extraordinary performances that I've given, I'm very, very touched and proud by the fact that I've had such an amazing career. And it's still there. You know, I'm still working. Having just finished a extensively hard season in Darlington, you know, where we do two shows a day, 12 shows a week. It is tough, you know, and I'm 74 years old now. And so you have to think about the future, about how, you know, are you going to go on?
Yes.
Yet more pantomimes.
And I absolutely won't press you to talk about what the money is nowadays, because it must be significantly more than 1,000 if it's the equivalent of a ticket price of a shilling and sixpence or something.
Yes, no, you're right. It is. So that is very nice indeed, you know, and it gives you the comfort to be able to do things and to enjoy life and stay in luxury hotels just outside Darlington called Rockcliffe Hall.
Yes.
And all of that, which is fantastic. So I'm really lucky.
And I grew up when I was between 11 and 19 in Southend. And I know you've played Dame Smee at Southend, I think probably at the Cliffs Pavilion probably as well.
Yes, David Hasselhoff.
Fantastic.
Which was wonderful. I mean, I absolutely adored him. He was enchanting, but he was such an unprofessional man. And if you know, in the theatre, you have to be in the theatre by the half, and that's 35 minutes before the show goes up. Well, he used to never arrive on the half. He used to arrive at beginners, which was like 5 minutes to seven, say. So at 7 o'clock, the curtain would go up and he would be just arriving. But he was just wonderful. I didn't mind that at all, because he was fantastic. I remember I think he's now married this lovely Welsh girl that he had as a girlfriend. And they're married, but she went out to, it's always my birthday in pantomime, December the 16th. So she went out to buy me a present, and she went to Poundland and bought me this stuff. And he was furious, and he came in and ripped out of my hands these things that she'd bought me in Poundland. And said, "I've got something much better for you. I'm sending it to America for it." And what it was one of those red things that people save lives in the ocean.
Ah, yes, a life ring.
Well, it wasn't a ring, it's a sort of oval shape.
Ah, okay.
And it's very American, and he signed it, which I've still got in my garage to this day. I mean, he was a lovely, lovely man. I adore him, and she's gorgeous, even though she goes to Poundland.
I mean, my presumption was he was always late for the half because he was running on the beach circa Baywatch, and that's why he was late, because Southend does have a beach of sorts.
The station that makes you feel good. apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, ant and deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It does have a beat. Yes, I hadn't thought about that, but sadly, I don't think that was the excuse that he would have given.
Quite right, too. Also, I know you know this, but you're christened Christopher Kenneth Begins, which made me think of Norman Stanley Fletcher, because, of course, you've been in Porridge as well.
Yes, I know. What a thrill. I mean, you know, we never knew in 1974 when we did Porridge that we would be involved in something that would go on to this day. But anyway, it was wonderful to be involved with Ronnie Barker and Richard Beckinsale, who sadly died.
Yes.
During the making of it. And it was tragic. The whole thing was tragic. But one wonderful, wonderful thing to be involved in. And still for it. I mean, you know, comedy wise, it stands up today brilliantly. It could have been made yesterday. I mean, that's the most extraordinary thing about it.
Yes.
And Ronnie Barker was so generous in as much as if he felt one of his lines written by Dick Clements and Ian Refrene was better said by me or another character, he would give it because he saw the whole picture. He wasn't like most. He wasn't a comedian. Comedians take. Mm. Whereas he was a great comedy actor, and comedy actors give. And they want the whole production to be successful. And that is why Porridge is one of the great sitcoms of the last century, I should think.
Yes. And how fantastic to have been there at all those seminal moments of history where programmes like I, Claudius, Porridge and were all made. Fantastic.
We used to rehearse at the Hilton Hotel. And in fact, it wasn't a Hilton Hotel, but it was a rehearsal rooms the BBC had. And there were three rehearsal rooms on each floor. And on the top floor, there was a canteen. And it was so star-studded. I remember getting in the lift one morning with Morecambe and Wise and going, hi, how are you? And they went, we're very well, how are you? And I said, fine, and we chatted. And I got out and thought, oh, dear, they've never met me. I only know them because they're in my sitting room every Saturday night or Sunday night.
And I like the fact you're in a confined space again. I have, in researching you, I really enjoyed your story about the Queen coming to a dressing room, which was the size of a postage stamp, and you being crammed in there with Prince Philip at the door.
That was such a wonderful moment. It was the 50th anniversary, I think, of the theatre, and I was there doing giving of my puck. In fact, I was the best puck in the park that year. But she doesn't like theatre. Her Majesty, her late Majesty. I mean, I met her on numerous occasions and I was thrilled to have met her. She was fantastic. But anyway, so I was chosen to meet her in my dressing room, which was the size of nothing. I mean, there was only room for two people in there. David Conville, who was the artistic director, stood in the doorway with Philip. And he said, this is Christopher Biggins, ma'am, who's playing Philostrate and Puck. And she said, how lovely. And I said, well, it is lovely, ma'am. And I showed her my costumes. and I then said, these are the greeting cards that people send you. And this is the make. I mean, I was just talking tripe. But I thought to myself, this poor woman must have to listen to this day in and day out. And eventually she said to me, and what are those? She's pointing to a shelf. So I brought them down. And I said, these are Puck shoes. And she turned to Philip in the doorway and said, look, Philip. puck shoot, whereupon I screamed with laughter. And there's this wonderful picture of the two of us, her looking very po-faced and me screaming with laughter. But the one thing she did have, well, she had many things, but she had a wonderful sense of humour. Mm. And, you know, I saw that on numerous occasions. But no, I've been very, very lucky indeed.
And you gave me a wonderful segue about two paragraphs ago, which was you were talking tripe to the Queen. So talking of talking tripe, let me bring you in to the structure of the Good Listening To show, where I'm going to talk to you about a clearing, a tree, an exercise called 5-4-3-2-1. There's going to be some alchemy, some gold. You're giving me gold by the bucket loader anyway. And then there'll be a cake via a cheeky bit of Shakespeare and a couple of random squirrels as well.
Right. Okay.
And just before we started, you went, what's all that about? So now let me explain. So let's get going. First of all, then, the epicenter is the clearing where all good questions come to get asked and all good stories come to get told. Christopher Biggins, where is a clearing for you? Where do you go to get clutter-free, inspirational and able to think?
You may be surprised at this, and I don't know. I mean, you've obviously interviewed a lot of people, so the answers must be fascinating. But my clearing is my car.
Aha.
And the car is a clearing because, you know, I used to love driving, and I used to love driving convertibles. And I had my first convertible was a Citroen 2CV, which I absolutely adored, where you rolled the roof back. And then I went on to BMW convertibles, then Peugeot convertibles. And now we have a Fiat 500 top of the range convertible, which with an electric roof, which is fantastic. So I've always loved that. And I remember being vividly in my BMW at traffic lights. And it was the beginning of my career. And I was having quite a bit of success. And I remember this lorry driver looked down at me and he went, "Oh, hello, lukewarm, how are you?" And, you know, you thought to yourself, yes, that's it, I've arrived. So lukewarm was just perfect. And then, of course, now I get Biggins all the time, which is a great thing. I love being called Biggins. I mean, Biggins is the most wonderful name. I mean, it's my name. I haven't made it up, and it sums up me brilliantly, I think.
So this is iconic as Biggles, isn't it? Biggins, Biggles.
Yes, I know.
And you've got Biggins, you've got Biggles goggles as well for glasses, which are very iconic on your face as well.
Well, I mean, and it is, but the car is great because I love the car because once you get in it and shut the door, you're on your own.
Yes.
And you can think about things. I listen to radio too. Always, except now. I used to love Radio 2 in the evenings when I was going home, perhaps after a theatre or something. And now Radio 2 is hideous. It's awful. It's good during the day. And I love Elaine Page and I love various, you know, theatrical people who are on it now. But it's losing something. And I hope they don't completely take it away from us because it's always been my go-to radio station. I never listen to the radio in the house, interestingly enough.
Just in the kingdom of your car.
Just in the kingdom of my car. And, you know, the house, I'm mad on television. So we have televisions everywhere. You won't be surprised to hear that I got 54 inches in the bedroom. And it's absolutely divine. And I know a lot of people say you should never have a television in the bedroom. They're absolutely wrong.
Just congratulate you for the expression, "I've got 54 inches in the bedroom." I love that. That's fantastic.
So the car is great. And you can go places. You can be silent if you want to. You can think about, you know, what you've got to do. You know, you make memos in your brain as to what to do next. You know, it's a great space.
Yes.
And I love it and I treasure it.
And I can imagine you not being a particularly aggressive or angry driver, just a very at one, at peace.
Well, that's interesting you should say that. As I'm getting older, I do get really angry and I do swear
wonderful.
Other drivers, because they are appalling. I mean, some of them don't have licenses, I don't think. And they really are rude. And I shout at people now. I mean, you know, that's me just a funny old age.
And by the way, I know that your dad used to run a garage called Middleton Motors. So did that give you your love of cars?
You know, I think it did. When I first passed my test, which I did, I think the second time, I got through 12 cars that year because I used to go into the garage and say to Dad, oh, can I have that car? And then I'd turn over a mini van I had, and I turned it over and smashed it all. So I had to have a new one after that. And it's so much so that the insurance company said to me, I'm afraid we're going to have to charge you 10 shillings every time you change your car because you're changing them so many times. So, I mean, I do love cars, I have to say. I mean, I really do.
So your clearing then is a car of choice. So do you want to be in your current car, which is a Fiat convertible, or pick a car in your life that you most enjoyed being in?
No, I think the car that I would have from choice is a top of the range Bentley. I think that would be wonderful. And the one thing I would love, and the first thing I'm going to do when I win the lottery, is get a chauffeur. I think the idea of a chauffeur, and you say to him, James, take me to the Delaunay, and I'm having lunch, and then pick me up at 2 o'clock or 2:30. I just think that is just to die for.
That's so delicious. The fact that I'm going to chauffeur you through, see what I'm doing here, in your Bentley of the clearing, which is lovely. I'm going to chauffeur you through the rest of your journey now.
Right, great.
So we're in your convertible Bentley, vehicle of choice. I'll be your chauffeur, if I may. And now I arrive with a tree, Christopher Biggins, to shake your tree to see which storytelling apples fall out. So this is the second bit of preparation, where you're now going to tell us four things that have shaped you, please.
Well, four things that have shaped me, I suppose. The first thing I have to say are my parents. I mean, I was an only child until I was 18 years old, and I was leaving home. I've been at Salisbury Rep, where I met David Wood, who you mentioned earlier. And David and I became really good friends. And I was at Salisbury Rep with him. And Stephanie Cole was in the company, and she said I should go to drama school. So I applied for the Bristol Vic, which she suggested I should go to. I got in, and I went off when I was 18 years old to Bristol. And as I was leaving, my mother said to me, oh, she said, they were from the West Country. She said, oh, by the way, she said, I'm pregnant. And I said, don't be so stupid. I mean, the thought of, you know, I was 18 years old, my parents still doing it was ghastly. I can't tell you, I was horrified. And so I do have a brother who's 18 years younger than me, called Sean, who is adorable, but he's not like a brother, he's a friend.
Is your brother an ambulance driver? Did I get that right?
Yes, my goodness, your research is fantastic. Yes, he's an ambulance driver, which he loves.
So anyway, the first bit of shapeage then, your parents, yeah. Next bit.
They paid for my education. They sent me to a private school because I had a great Auntie Vi, who was a great snob. And she insisted I have elocution lessons, which I did. That's why I talk like I do now. But they worked really hard. My father worked all day, all night, practically. My mother, the same. And they did that to make my life better. And they succeeded. And they are truly magnificent creatures who sadly are no longer with us.
And your father obviously had to work hard because he's turning you over 12 cars a year. So the second bit of shapeage now.
Well, I suppose I have to really give that to Mrs. Christian, who, when I went to my private school, which my parents paid for, she was the elocution mistress that taught me how to speak the Queen's English. And also she saw in me something that she thought there was an actor in me, I think. So she encouraged that. So I was able to, she gave me all sorts of wonderful roles at school. And she got me ready for my first job, which was Salisbury Rep. And bearing in mind that those days, reps were fantastic places for actors. And I feel very sorry for actors nowadays who can't actually use that anymore because it doesn't exist. I mean, you know, the training ground is fantastic. And so she enabled me to go to Salisbury Rep and say, Mr. Salzberg, can you give me a job? And he said, yes, you can come for two shows. No, one show. You can come for one show, which I did. And then I stayed for 2 years. I was on £2 a week, heavily subsidized by my parents. And I used to love propping, going out and getting the props. And often my parents would come and see the play, and there was more of their home on the stage than there was back at home. You know, I used to take everything. And so I was very, very lucky. And that, you know, certainly was Mrs. Christian has to be there
Lovely. She's number two shapeage. Third thing that shaped you?
Well, I suppose it has to be a man called Nat Brenner, because Nat, our year was a particularly young year, and we had a couple of actors who fell in love and got married, and I became their best man. And I went on their honeymoon, and he was, and it finished a year later, the marriage, and I had to go and separate all the presents and give them back to people. Anyway, I went on their honeymoon, and which was lovely.
It wasn't Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, I'm joking.
No. That would be wonderful if it was. But it was almost as grand as that. But she was an actress who was fantastic, and she was going to be a big, big star. And he was really a joke, if you like. But anyway, so they got married, and they separated, and she then went back to her doctor, previous boyfriend, and married him and had two or three children by him. And the other one was a man called Jeremy Irons, who went on to win Oscars. And, you know, and it was incredible, because Nat Brenner could see talent. I mean, he was extraordinary. It may not have been the sort of talent you thought, but there was something about, and I became very friendly with his wife. And if you remember, they lived above the theatre school,
yes,
in Clifton. And I spent most of my time upstairs gossiping with her. He would come up and we'd have wonderful chats. And it was a marvellous 2 years of my life. So I'd have to say Nat Brenner has to be there, because he groomed me, I think, into what I am today.
And just to go back a step, you weren't describing Jeremy Irons as the joke, or were you? Was that the irony?
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, it was. Yes.
Blimey. Yes.
You know, and he wasn't really, you know, you wouldn't have said, oh, this man's going to earn an Oscar one day.
Yes.
But he did. And, you know, he proved us all wrong. But he was an adorable man. And I still love him. And I still see him. And he's great. And funny enough, I introduced him to his second wife, Sinead Cusack, because we did a show called London Assurance in the West End, which we took from the Royal Shakespeare Company. And next door to us was a show called Godspell, mm-hmm, in which Jeremy played the lead, one of the leads in that. So that's how they met, and I introduced them. So he's got two marriages to thank me for. So, a fourth one just shaped me. I think Alan Boyd, who was a producer with ITV, I was doing pantomime in Newcastle. I was doing Mother Goose, funny enough. And he came up to see me and took me out for dinner and said, they're doing a show, a variety show with a difference. And it was called Surprise, Surprise. And he very much liked me to play one of the presenters of it. And I was so excited that I couldn't believe it. I really didn't take it in. You know, I was sort of rather low key about it, because it was going to be a major weekend television series for London Weekend Television. And I was going to be one of the presenters out of two. And at the end of it, he said, I'm interested that you haven't asked who the other presenter is. And I said, oh God, I'm sorry. Who is the other presenter? And he said, Cilla Black. Well, I couldn't believe it, because Cilla Black was an icon to me. I mean, she was extraordinary. I mean, I can't say that I grown up with her, but I did grow up with her, you know. I mean, I knew her, and I knew the fact that she had semi-retired to have children, and she brought up her three boys magnificently. And then she came back on a Wogan show, and she made such an impact. That's where London Weekend decided to give her this show and decided to ask me to co-host with her. And that was the most extraordinary thing. And I always think that Alan saw obviously something in me, and I'll never forget, because it then propelled me into yet another field, you know, which I absolutely adored.
It's the instinct for the chemistry of a double act, isn't it? I'm hearing there.
Yes, I think
like the Morecambe and Wise in the Lift, Cilla Black, yeah, and Christopher Biggins. It's yes, absolutely.
And we did get on so well, and I became really good friends of hers. And I was devastated when she died. I was devastated when Bobby died. And we went out that day that he died to be with her and her children. And it was very, very upsetting because he did everything for her. And I remember the first time we went out, she said, she gave me her credit card. And she said, you pay for the dinner tonight. And I said, no, what do you mean? We'll all go Dutch. She said, what's Dutch? And I said, well, Dutch is where we all pay for ourselves. Oh, no, Bobby would have hated that. I said, but that's how what life is now. And she gave me the credit card and we didn't use it. We did all go Dutch. And but she was completely lost. He did everything for her. When I went home after the day he died, and she rang me at midnight in tears because she didn't know how to feed the dogs.
Wow.
You know, he was the most extraordinary man. And he really made and created this star and put her on a pedestal. And she didn't carry money. She didn't do anything. He did everything. And he was a wonderful man. So that would be my fourth.
Yes, the fourth shaping. Lovely. Thank you for that. And so now we're on to three things that inspire you. So if there's any overlap, don't worry about that because they could all be of a similar ilk. But three things that inspire you now.
Interesting. Inspire is a very interesting word. I'm inspired by a girlfriend of mine who is called Tricia Guild. And she has a design shop called Designers Guild. And she married one of my best friends called Richard Polo, who had a restaurant called Joe Allen's. And he brought it from New York to London. And overnight, I have to perhaps include Richard as well as Tricia, but overnight, they changed my life. Because up until then, I thought that eating in a restaurant you did when you were hungry. I had no idea that there was a social side to eating. And certainly Joe Allen's blew London apart because you used to go there and the place was heaving. Everybody was there. Everybody in show business because it opened late. The food was very simple and brilliant. It was just wonderful. You'd go there and you'd meet friends. I mean, sometimes I'd go there and it would take me an hour before I got to my seat because I'm saying hello to people. Mm-hmm. And so it was extraordinary. And then he married Tricia. And Tricia is a wonderful, wonderful interior designer. And most of our house is full of her stuff. And she is an inspiration because he sadly died, Richard. And she really looked after him in an unusual way, in a way that you'd never thought she would. But she did. And she was also working very hard and not only looking after him, but looking after their homes and everything. And she is extraordinary. I mean, her energy and her talent is huge. So they have to be there at the top of that list, I think.
Second influencer or influencing element?
I suppose I love actresses, and I've had the pleasure of working with some wonderful actresses, namely Judi Dench, who is extraordinary. She taught me how to remember people's names, like you all should always repeat the name, Christian name and surname. So if you're introduced to Christopher Biggins, you go, Christopher Biggins, you repeat it. How are you, Christopher? You know, and so that sort of goes in for that moment. And that was very clear. But also she was unbelievable. We were lucky enough. We were doing a season at the RSC at the Aldwych. And we were lucky enough to be doing a wonderful season, London Assurance, which was incredible production, which we then transferred to the West End. There was Twelfth Night, Henry VIII with Peggy Ashcroft and Donald Sinden. There was several others, and it was a wonderful season. But Judy got married to Michael Williams at a matinee before the matinee of Twelfth Night. And that night she came on stage for the curtain call and all of us threw confetti over her. And the whole audience went wild. I mean, they really did. It was extraordinary. One of those wonderful moments you'll never forget. And she deserved that. She deserves everything she gets. I mean, I think it's wonderful that she's suddenly become a huge film star. She's so generous in her time. You know, the fact now that she can't see is just awful. But, you know, if you go up and say, hi, Judy, it's Biggins. She'll go, Biggins, how are you? You know, she is so enthusiastic with life. That is what's so marvellous about her.
I've just seen her in the Sondheim repeat of the programme that was made last year, singing Bring on the Clowns. I mean, just
wonderful. I mean, I was lucky enough to be there in the theatre seeing her live. And it was one of the great, but I thought the whole thing was wonderful, didn't you?
Absolutely. Beautiful.
I mean, yeah. You know, I mean, Cameron is, have I got one more to go?
You have.
Yeah, well, so Cameron would be the last one because I've known Cameron for nearly 50 years. And I used to, as an actor, used to work for him in the office. And in those days, we would rob one production to pay another production. And I remember we did a rock nativity, which we opened in Newcastle at the Theatre Royal. And it was pretty much a disaster, I can't tell you. The technical, in those days, there were no mics, you know, radio mics. It was all mics on leads. And at the end of Act One, when Jesus is suddenly born, Mary was tangled up with about another 50 mics. And she was on the floor, staggering to get her mouth around this mic. And in exasperation, she threw the baby Jesus in the air and it slid down the Cross Arch. And I can't tell you, it's one of the greatest moments ever. And Cameron has the best sense of humour. And even though he could see this production leaving him and failing miserably, we never stopped laughing. I mean, it was the funniest thing. And Cameron has been such a friend of mine. And he's, I suppose, I'm his oldest friend in a way. And we have the same sense of humour. We see each other and speak to each other all the time. He is incredibly kind and generous. He's wonderful. And I couldn't be more pleased with his success. I mean, his success is phenomenal. I mean, he's the greatest theatre producer we've ever had. And you know, to have musicals, which we will never see happen again, lasting 35, 40 years, is extraordinary. Mm. I mean, you know, when you think the start of all that was Les Mis, and Les Mis was given a very, at the Barbican when it opened, and I went to the first night and absolutely adored it. But the critics and a lot of the public hated it. But he wasn't going to be put off by that. I think he spent a lot of money. He knew that it was a show that would run, not 30-odd years, but it would run. And he persisted. And everybody said, no, don't transfer it. You'll lose everything. And he told them to fuck off. And he absolutely did it. And it was only him that made that show the phenomenal success and made him, you know, the producer of the decade, I mean, or of the century.
Tenacity, courage, and just the conviction to tell them to, you know.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that is what makes him so great. You know, he has had the odd flop here and there, but doesn't matter. I think that makes him an even better man than he is. But And he also adores, I mean, we talked about the side-by-side by Sondheim, which is on television recently. It was a great, great show. And of course, Sondheim was a good friend of his. And they, again, had a wonderful link with humour. And they would go on holiday together. And it was just wonderful. And Sondheim is the greatest lyricist, songwriter ever. I mean, some of his songs. And I remember that he wrote a musical, Merrily We Roll Along. And I saw Merrily We Roll Along in New York in a preview. And I was lucky enough because after the preview, it lasted a week and it came off. But it is to me the greatest musical ever. It's just phenomenal. And that was Stephen Sondheim. And once again, you know, he was advised by people that I don't know how he was advised, but anyway, it came off and I don't think it should have done. It was just brilliant. There's a wonderful documentary, by the way, on one of the channels, and it's a fabulous documentary about the making of it, the failure of it. And it's really worth watching. But it was a fantastic show. And he was another good friend of Cameron's, and Cameron is extraordinary and I love him dearly. And we're the bestest of friends, which is lovely.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
And now we're on to two things that never fail to grab your attention. So this is borrowed from the film Up. This is, oh, squirrels, if that is a reference that is familiar to you. What never fails to get your attention, whatever else is going on for you in your hectic life?
Well, I suppose beauty. I think, you know, there's something about, I mean, you know, I'm gay, and I've been blessed with having a lot of lovers in my life who have been beautiful. And I think beauty is terrific. I mean, I think it can also be awful. I think it can put people in a different light. But beauty is very nice. To have someone beautiful on your arm is truly wonderful. And I think it gives you the courage and the tenacity to be able to live life to the full in a way. And I've always been lucky, and I've always had attractive men on my arm. And I have now my soulmate. We've been together 36 years, I think. I mean, it's fantastic. Neil is an extraordinary man, and he does everything for me now. He's a wonderful carer. Two years ago, I had a new knee put in, and I had a new valve put into my heart, and so I'm like bionic man. And I couldn't have done it without him. I mean, he's been absolutely fantastic.
And in my research, am I right in assuming he used to work for British Airways? Is that right?
He did work for British Airways, poor thing.
And so, do you mind if I ask, did you meet on a flight, or is it not quite as obvious
as
that?
No. Funny enough, what happened was we met in a nightclub in Glasgow.
And then, I'm glad I asked.
I was with someone else, and it didn't quite work out. We saw each other, and then, you know, things, we didn't see each other for a while. And I was on a flight coming back from Barbados, because I was artistic director for 3 years of a Shakespeare and opera season in Barbados. Not a bad job. I remember Nicola McAuliffe. I rang her and said, Nicola, would you like to come to Barbados for a month? And this amount of money, and you do this, and you get accommodation and food, and you do this, and will you direct this, and will you star in this? And she said, that's very nice, thank you. And she was rather low key, and the phone went down, and that was very nice. She rang back a minute later, and she said, you did say Barbados, didn't you? I said, I didn't. She went, ah! Well, I mean, so, and she was, we had a wonderful time. In fact, she came out to Barbados with her boyfriend, and they got married in Barbados, and so that was wonderful. I mean, it was a great job, and I that was a wonderful period of my life.
So you've had lots of halcyon days with halcyon windows of opportunity on lubricated hinges opening for you, it would seem. You're around at the right place at the right time many times over, which is a lovely accolade to be able to consider.
Yes,
indeed. So in the structure, beauty was the thing that never fails to grab your attention. And so the second squirrel now, what never fails to grab your attention as a monster of distraction for you?
Well, I suppose talent, because talent is extraordinary. I mean, you know, you can go. I go to the theatre a lot. I love the theatre. And talent is amazing, because you can go and see somebody in a play or a musical or whatever, and they are brilliant. You can go back 6 months later and see them being appalling. And, you know, it's extraordinary that's what the talent is all about, I think, is because I think if you're good all the time, I think it, you know, it becomes rather boring. And, you know, we've seen great actors, and I worry that we're not breeding eccentrics anymore.
And by the way, that's so... You know, resonant with. I read something about James Stewart talking about the moments of magic that you create. And it was an article about It's a Wonderful Life, which of its day, I mean, it's heralded as the greatest Christmas film ever, but of its day, it didn't do very well. And yet he's proudest of it because of the moments of magic that happened within it.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's quite right. I mean, that was just a wonderful film. I was privileged to meet some very famous people like John Gielgud and Edith Evans and Ralph Richardson. In fact, I've got a Ralph Richardson story I'll tell you. But first of all, there was an actress called Athene Siler. Do you ever remember Athene Siler?
No, say the name again.
Athene Siler. Mm-hmm. So she was in this play. She had third billing to John Gielgud, Ralph Richardson, and Edith Evans. And the producer, Binky Beaumont, said, look, I'm going to give you a box.
Although that's such a theatre name as well, Binky Beaumont.
I know, Binky Beaumont, wonderful. But, so they gave her a box. So it said Ralph Richardson, John Gielgud, Edith Evans in whatever the play was. And in the bottom was a box with Athene Siler. So she's thrilled, and she goes to Brighton for the first night, and she gets it, the stage door, there's the poster, all the names are right, and when it gets down to the box, it says, with a tiny sailor.
Same difference, different.
I know, but Ralph Richardson story is a classic. I was made a member by Winston Graham, who wrote the Poldark novels. I was he gave me membership of a club called the Savile Club in London. And I was too young, I think, to really appreciate it. I mean, but it was really rather wonderful. And if you went in on your own for lunch or dinner, you sat at the table that had singles. So you'd sit there and you'd make conversation with other members. And the waitresses weren't allowed to interrupt you to find out what you wanted to have. So he was there for lunch. And at 2:15, the waitress had to say to him, excuse me, sir, but you've not written anything down. What would you like for lunch? And he went, I'd like a jam omelette. So she said, all right. So she went away and she came back 5 minutes later and she says, chef says, who's it for? And he said, tell chef it's for Sir Ralph Richardson. And she came back 5 minutes later and said, chef says no. And he turned to the man he was dining with and said, who'd you have to be to get a jam omelette?
That's a lovely story. And now we could be at a quirky or unusual fact about you we couldn't possibly know until you tell us, Mr. Biggins.
I really, really enjoy eating out.
So the quirky, unusual fact is you like eating out, in a nutshell.
I like eating out, yes. Is that quirky enough?
That'll do for me. That's awesome. Okay, now we've shaken your tree. Huzzah. And now we're moving away from the tree, staying in the clearing. And we're going to talk about alchemy and gold now. When you're at purpose and in flow, Biggins, what are you absolutely happiest doing?
Well, I'm happiest, I think, being with Neil. We get on so well. We have such a good time. We have rows, of course, but like everybody does. And I love going abroad. I mean, I love traveling.
Lovely. Now we're going to award you with a cake. I've got to ask you.
I love cake. Yes, I love cake. Yes.
So what's the cake of choice, please?
Well, I think I'm going to say, and this may be a bit boring, but I love Christmas cake. And I love Christmas cake with marzipan, but not icing. And my great auntie Vi, the snob I was telling you about, she used to make wonderful Christmas cake and the most marvellous marzipan to go on it. And I absolutely love that. And I get very upset when they put icing on top of that.
I love that she's a terrible snob, but she made great Christmas cake with marzipan.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And do you mind if I ask, did you get any, I don't necessarily perceive you as being one, but because you've mentioned again, she was a terrible snob, and yet you've said, are you a snob is what I'm sort of saying. Have you got some of that from her?
No, I don't think I have, funny enough. I mean, I think I'm the most unsnobby person I know, because we have got in our book, our diary, address book, we've got millionaires, we've got working actors, we've got friends who have no money at all. I mean, you know, it's quite eclectic. Mm. And I like that. I like the fact. And I love being friends with millionaires. I mean, that is wonderful. I love going on their jets. I love helicopters. I love all the luxury things, you know, and I would quite like that, I suppose. But it's much better, I think, to live vicariously off others.
I love the antidote to snobbery, which is to have an eclectic address book.
exactly.
What's the favourite inspirational quote that's always given?
Oh, right, that's right. Yes, well, I think I have to turn to Oscar Wilde, I think, who I was very much a fan of. I mean, I think what happened to him was just appalling. And there are so many quotes that he gave. And I'm just trying to think of one now. But I think nearly everything he quoted was fantastic and meant something to me. And I think meant something to a lot of people, especially gay people. And I will always thank him for that. So is that enough?
Yes. Generally, his quotes are worth looking up, is what you're saying.
So go
to Oscar Wilde for all your main inspiration.
Exactly.
Lovely. And what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Best piece of I've been ever given is, Biggins, never stop laughing.
Wonderful.
And I think that is just fantastic. I mean, I laugh all the time. I have a very recognisable laugh. I remember Leslie Joseph and I, who a great, great friend of mine, we went to see the American comedian.
Ruby Wax, are you talking about?
No. American.
Oh, sorry. Joan Rivers. No.
Joan Rivers.
Yes, thank you.
Joan Rivers at the Haymarket Theatre. And Leslie and I got a review in Times for our laugh. And I'm thrilled at that because she was, and I met her, I had dinner with her at Joan Collins's one night, and she was quite quiet, which I found interesting. And at the end of the evening, she said, Christopher, she said, do you like shopping? So I said, yes, I do. She said, would you like to shop with me tomorrow? So I said, I'd love to. So I went shopping in the markets in London, and we had the best time. And she was just fantastic, a real inspiration. And I think laughter is wonderful. I mean, I can't think of anything better than having a good laugh.
And do you remember who said it to you? It's obviously manifested beautifully, but who said, Biggins, never stop laughing?
I can't remember who said it. I think several people have said it to me. Mm. And I take it on board, and I will never stop laughing. I mean, I always, and I think Joan Collins is in Los Angeles at the moment, and we were talking the other day on the phone, and I said, you're having a nice day. She said, I am. She said, but they're not as funny over here.
Oh.
And, you know, we love going out with you because you're funny. And I think that was a great accolade, really a lovely thing to say, because I do love, there's nothing like a good laugh.
And obviously it's Dame Joan's 90th coming up soon. Are you obviously going to be sort of, you know, man of honour at the party?
Well, I've done her wedding, and I've done her last birthday, and I've done their anniversary, so I'm sure I will be. I mean, she's the most extraordinary woman I've ever met. I mean, she is brilliant. I mean, she is so kind. She is funny. She once again enjoys life to the full. Mm. And she's had the most amazing life. She's had almost the most amazing life as Christopher Biggins.
Dame Christopher Biggins and Dame Joan. How wonderful. Lovely. So now I think we could be at the point of Shakespeare and all the world's a stage and all the men and women merely players. How, when all is said and done, Christopher Biggins, would you most like to be remembered?
Well, I think I'd like to be remembered, and I'm sorry to repeat this, for my joy of life and my laughter. And I think on my gravestone, if we could put, he made us laugh, would be fantastic, and a great epitaph.
Thank you. Just doing a bit of silence there deliberately to let that hang. Lovely. And could we now find out where we can find out all about One Biggins when we want to on the internet, please?
Oh, right. Well, I think I'm Instagram, and I think it may be One Biggins, O-N-E-B-I-G-G-I-N-S. And I think the same is true of Twitter. You know, but it's good, and it's very nice to have people's reaction to you, you know, and people saying nice things. And we all like nice things, don't we, being said about us. And so it's nice to get reassured.
And it's been a great pleasure, by the way, chauffeuring you in the open top Bentley through the curated journey of the Good Listening To show. As this has been your moment in the sunshine in the Good Listening To show, is there anything else you'd like to say, Christopher Biggins?
No.
Wonderful. So you've been listening to me, Chris Grimes, but most importantly, this has been, and we're leaving you on laughter, one Biggins. Thank you very much indeed, and good night.
You've been listening to the Good Listening To show here on UK Health Radio with me, Chris Grimes. Oh, it's my son.
If you've enjoyed the show, then please do tune in next week to listen to more stories from The Clearing.
If you'd like to connect with me on LinkedIn, then please do so. There's also a dedicated Facebook group for the show too. You can contact me about the programme, or if you'd be interested in experiencing some personal impact coaching with me, care of my Level Up Your Impact programme, that's chris@secondcurve.uk. On Twitter and Instagram, it's
@thatchrisgrimes.
So until next time, for me, Chris Grimes, from UK Health Radio, and from Stan,
to your good health.
Goodbye.